Welcome to the Downstream Column podcast, Protein A Chromatography, a look at where we've been and where we're going. I'm Brandi Sargent, editor of the Downstream Column. Joining me today is Jonathan Royce. Jonathan is the business leader for chromatography resins at GE Healthcare Life Sciences. He has over 15 years of experience in the life sciences field and has held positions in R&D, process development, sales, and marketing. Jonathan has a master's degree in chemical engineering from Northeastern University, and he resides with his wife and two children in Uppsala, Sweden. Protein A has become an institution in monoclonal antibody purification, and it has evolved considerably since its first commercial use in the 1980s. What do you think has been the most important advancements?
Well, I think really the most important commercial advancement, I would say really in general, it's the continual redevelopment of the technology. So I think probably what's been most key to Protein A becoming established and remaining such an important part of monoclonal antibody production is the fact that as new challenges have arisen in the industry, Protein A has been redeveloped to meet those challenges. So if you look back to, say, the mid-90s, the challenge then was that bioreactor volumes were starting to increase to the 10,000 liter and larger scale. And at that point, Protein A was really challenged by a volumetric throughput limitation where flow rate was the most important thing that could be improved for the Protein A step to improve its productivity. If you look back over the last, decade to 12 to 15 years, probably that situation has changed significantly so that volume is not the main rate-limiting part of the process, but actually mass of protein. So as expression levels have increased in bioreactors, we've switched from a volumetric throughput limitation to a mass throughput limitation. And there again, Protein A has had to be reinvented to increase capacity. So now it's been a question not of just flow rate, but also of capacity in order to break that mass bottleneck. And then I think, of course, one of the most significant developments in Protein A has really been the work around alkali stability of the ligand and improving that feature to create proteins that today are nearly as alkali stable as many chemical ligands that we use in biomanufacturing. And I think really without that development, it would have been very hard for Protein A to remain as really the go-to step in monoclonal purification.
And you have mentioned quite a few considerable changes, and you talk about a little bit at the end there why Protein A needs to continue to evolve. Could you expand on this a little bit and talk a little bit about why is it so important for Protein A to keep evolving with the industry?
Yeah, you know, I think the industry has almost every 5 years had some sort of new challenge that it's faced in terms of what's the rate limiting part of the process, what are the key challenges in terms of environmental factors, also in terms of scalability of the process, both in terms of time and in terms of literally volumetric scale. And had Protein A essentially remained the way it was in the early 80s when it was first commercialized, I think you would have seen that other technologies would have displaced it simply because it would have been too static for an industry that's been highly dynamic over the last several decades. So I think really that's one main key. And then it's also important to remember that Protein A is a relatively costly resin class. And as we've had generational improvements of Protein A, every generation has led to a lower cost of ownership and a better cost position in terms of cost of goods and also in terms of some of the auxiliary costs that surround the Protein A step, including sizes of columns, the amount of buffers that we use, even labor that goes into the process. So I think it's the importance of this continual evolution is really both around keeping up with the other technology that surrounds protein A and making sure that it's well matched in terms of capacity and throughput, as well as ensuring that the cost of protein A as a portion of the overall cost of mAb manufacturing has continued to decrease over time.
And I think that part of the evolution that you're talking about here was demonstrated in a recent GE press release that said that a new standard for monoclonal antibody purification was being set. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. So in September of this year, we launched a new generation of protein A resin called MAbSelect Prisma. And MAbSelect Prisma is really designed to respond to two main challenges that we believe the industry is facing today. One is around a mass throughput issue on the protein A step. And this is really the result of continued improvements in upstream technology and a rise in titers over the last several decades that's been on the order of roughly 100-fold improvement in terms of cell productivity. And that improvement has really led to a situation where, in some situations, the protein A step is actually the rate-limiting step in the overall antibody manufacturing process. So MAbSelect Prisma is really designed to provide a capacity that is well-matched to those increasing upstream titers and is also well-matched to the secondary and tertiary steps that follow protein A in the monoclonal antibody purification process. The other thing that MAbSelect Prisma is really designed to address is the risk of a bioburden contamination on the protein A column. So protein A columns, because they are traditionally cleaned with weaker CIP chemicals than other parts of the process, tend to be more prone to bioburden contamination. And MAbSelect Prisma uses a new generation protein A ligand that has been alkali stabilized so that it has similar alkali stability to what you would expect from chemically based resins like ion exchangers or hydrophobic interaction chromatography resins.
You described a little bit about the new MAbSelect Prisma A protein A chromatography resin and some of its features and benefits. Could you describe how it's different from your other MAbSelect resins?
So it's different in many ways, actually. It, as I mentioned before, it uses a new generation ligand that we really designed with the thought around improving alkali stability to a level that we've never had before on protein A. It also uses a new high-flow agarose bead where we've implemented some new technology in our bead manufacturing process to really create a very porous matrix that has a rigidity that supports very high flow rates in large-scale manufacturing. And then the ligand and the bead themselves have been actually optimized in parallel. So I think one of the main reasons that MAbSelect Prisma stands out so much from the rest of the MAbSelect portfolio is that this is the first time where we've really taken the team that creates our beads and the team that creates our ligands and put them together in the same room and said, let's talk about some of the trade-offs between the bead design and the ligand design and see if we can find a really optimal situation for both. And that's led to a product that's really superior in terms of the capacity that it offers, the productivity that it offers, and even its cleanability and its ability to be sanitized on a regular basis in manufacturing. So there's quite a few points that differentiate it, and I think it's important for people to understand that even though it shares the MAbSelect name and is built on really the long heritage of MAbSelect products, this is a new generation design, both in terms of the bead structure and in terms of the ligand itself.
So you mentioned before, you touched on pricing, and something that always comes up or is often raised as a concern with Protein A is the significant contribution to the overall cost of production of monoclonal antibodies. How do you address this issue?
So I think our strategy at GE has always been to stay at the forefront of this technology and to use technological innovation as a way to improve the overall cost position of a protein A in a monoclonal antibody purification process. You know, it would be, it's easy for companies to copy products that are on the market and then try to offer them at a lower price, but they don't, those efforts don't usually respond to the current needs of the market in a sufficient way, nor do they really provide long-term savings in terms of reducing the scale of operations, improving the speed of operations, and really addressing additional cost factors that are outside of just the acquisition of the resin itself. So our strategy has always been and continues to be, let's look at the current challenges that the industry has. Let's address those with technological innovation. Let's commercialize those products at a price that provides an overall savings and an overall lower cost point for our customers. And then let's sort of start that process again and look at, okay, now that we've solved the current set of challenges, what's the next set of challenges that we expect to see in the future? And how will we address those to continue to provide future savings in terms of cost of manufacturing? And I think we have a good track record here. So if you look at the evolution of the original Protein A Sepharose products to MAP Select, to MAP Select Shore, and that most recently in 2011 to MAP Select Shore LX, it's quite easy to demonstrate either through cost modeling or through actual calculations that either we've done or users have done and published that every generation of those products leads to a lower cost position. And we expect that MAP Select Prisma is going to do the same and that future generations of protein A resins from GE will follow in that same tradition.
It certainly makes sense to use innovation as a tool for, you know, reducing the overall cost. As an innovator and by creating innovator type products, one of the things that I know comes up as a concern often as well is that with any critical component of the biomanufacturing process, supply chain stability is always an issue. When you have these innovative products that, as you mentioned, there's not, you know, copies of your latest product, how do you tackle the supply chain stability issue?
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's an area of that's really in focus at GE and has been for several years now. I think we're well aware of the fact that many of our products are single sourced by our customers, and we have been working very hard over the last few years to secure our own supply chain of critical raw materials to ensure that we will always be able to supply these products to the market. And so that includes, for instance, our efforts to introduce a second supplier of agarose on our bead manufacturing. It includes the investments we're making in the facility in Uppsala, where we manufacture a lot of these products, where today we actually have redundant manufacturing facilities that are co-located on the same site, but separated by quite some distance, physical distance from one another, to the investments that we're making now to expand some of those manufacturing areas to stay ahead of market demand. And in the protein area, specifically, we have always worked to have full control over our manufacturing processes, whether we run them ourselves to manufacture ligands or whether we use contract manufacturers to manufacture the ligands. We own the IP around our ligand designs. We own even the cell banks that we use or that our partners use to produce them. And for MAP Select Prisma, we've taken an additional step to invest in and implement an on-site manufacturing process for the MAPSelect Prisma ligands so that we will do approximately half of the manufacturing ourselves on the site in Uppsala. And we'll use a contract manufacturer to produce the other 50% so that we have good redundancy in that supply chain, good security in terms of geographical locations of where we manufacture, and also good redundancy in terms of the flow of incoming goods into our manufacturing facility. And then on the sort of business continuity side, we do a lot of work internally thinking about potential risks in our supply chain, implementing mitigation plans there. We have a dedicated team that works on business continuity, so this is their full-time job to really ensure that we minimize any sort of risks that might present themselves, understand what the action plans are if one of those risks were to manifest itself. And we've even gone so far over the last several years to build a strategic reserve of resins that are used in approved manufacturing processes, so that should the unthinkable happen and we had an upset in our supply chain, we would continue to supply approved manufacturing processes out of that additional inventory that we carry while we recovered from whatever interruption we'd had in our own supply chain. And so it's a combination of some pretty hefty investments on the part of GE, some forward thinking on the part of our R&D team in the way that they design new products, and then some very active involvement from our manufacturing team, who is thinking hard about how we build our supply chain, what our supply chain needs to look like in the future, and how we mitigate any risks that are present in that supply chain today.
And now I'm going to ask you if you could get out your crystal ball and tell us what you think the next set of advancements in protein A chromatography resins will be, and how will these advancements ultimately support the ever-changing needs of the biopharma industry?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think that there's a few things that could happen in the future. And as you say, it's a bit of a crystal ball, so none of these are sure things. But if you look at sort of the trends that are happening in the early stages of process development today, if some of those continue, you can draw some conclusions about what some future states might be. So clearly there is a lot of activity looking at converting the protein A step to a continuous operation. And so as we think about that, we think about a few things that will change in the process. One is that there will be more protein A columns in manufacturing than there are today, because undoubtedly, or invariably, I should say, continuous manufacturing requires more columns than batch manufacturing. So there will be more columns, but they'll be smaller. And the fact that they'll be smaller also means that there will be more opportunity for protein A and other steps in downstream purification to take advantage of PPAP technology. So I think we'll see if continuous really takes off big and starts to get implemented into more large-scale manufacturing processes, I think what we're going to see is also an increased proliferation of pre-packed technology into those facilities, and a greater reliance on end users to have vendors do packing for them. And those particular types of processes may require some custom versions of the protein A resins that are on the market today. So in 2015, for example, we launched a product called MAPSelect Sure PCC, which is really a version of MAPSelect LX that has been optimized towards continuous manufacturing. It enables much higher capacity at shorter residence times than what you can get with MAPSelect Sure LX. And that's a key parameter to achieving high productivity in a continuous process. So if continuous takes off, I think that we'll see probably some tailored products for that type of operation. And that can be both in terms of the design of the bead itself, but it can also be in terms of the use of more alkali stable ligands, like the ligand that we have in maps like Prisma, because as you can imagine, a continuous process where a protein A column may stay in service for 24 hours or in the extreme case, even several days or weeks, the risk of a bioburden contamination increases dramatically as you increase the in-service time of the column. I think the other thing, if I take a little different look into the crystal ball, the other thing that's happening is that we're seeing a diversification of antibody structures in general. So whereas historically protein A has addressed purification, where we are taking advantage of the common FC region that exists in most antibodies, I think there's a potential future state where fewer antibodies have an FC region or have an intact FC region. Perhaps the FC regions have been engineered at a genetic level to look slightly different than what we see in a natural IgG form. And that will mean that protein A will also have to adapt to deal with that diversification of the target molecules. And so I think there is a potential future state where protein A is offered in several tailored versions, depending on the type of antibody structure that we're trying to capture. I think there's also a future state where protein A has brothers and sisters that are other types of protein ligands that address an even bigger portion of the non-FC containing antibody library. And so I think those will be the main two challenges. And I think that the advancements that will be required in the protein area will be, I think that they're achievable. I think that they're going to require more flexibility on the part of vendors like GE and others. And I think that it will also require closer collaboration between end users and the companies that are actually producing these resins, because they'll be more of a tailor-fit solution rather than a one-size-fits-all situation like we see today.
I think that's really interesting. And I think that your point to closer collaboration and more tailor-fit solutions makes a lot of sense, especially like you mentioned with the diversity of different antibody structures that are coming through. Is there anything else you'd like to add for our listeners before we close for today?
No, I think, we covered a lot of good topics. Protein A is sort of a fascinating area. I could talk about it for a long time. I spent some time reading books about the history of protein A and how it was discovered. It's a relatively recent discovery. It was actually discovered in 1958, so it's less than 60 years ago that it was actually even identified, and it took many, many years before people actually understood its potential as a purification technology. I think one thing that people should keep in mind is that, as we discussed earlier, protein A is always discussed. The cost of protein A is frequently discussed. There's been a lot of effort over the years to look for alternatives to protein A. Many alternatives have been identified. Many of them work from a technical standpoint, but none of them offer the broad applicability of protein A and the very sort of binary ease of use that protein A offers for antibody purification. And so given that, and the fact that protein A has a fascinating route in nature, where it developed over probably millions of years on the cell wall of Staph aureus, I really do think that protein A will continue to be an important part of antibody manufacturing in the future. And I think, as I said earlier, that I think the cost of using protein A will continue to decrease as we develop future generations of the product.
Yes, thank you. And I think it's been a really interesting topic. I think protein A itself, as you mentioned, is really interesting. And I think that's unique for a product that is so widely used, to have it be still so interesting and have still so many sort of areas that it can evolve into. And so I've really appreciated the time today.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Cell Culture Dish podcast. To learn more about this and other stem cell and biomanufacturing related topics, please visit us at www.cellculturedish.com. Or for downstream biomanufacturing topics, www.downstreamcolumn.com.